two sheets here. They are already collated. All people have to do is take two and pass them on. Wait a second. They are not collated. So people have very difficult jobs ahead. They're not collated. Sadly, they are not collated. This is the second sheet. That's the first sheet. Let's see if this works. Okay. So as you know, we try very hard to teach you the things you need to know about Torah and about life beyond the regular course of learning in Gemara or Tanakh, Machshava. And so we've had the Yemei Yon on Emunah, which we're going to continue, and on Talmud Torah. And tonight we're going to be starting to speak about education. Now, education is an important thing, even if a person does not become a teacher. Every person who is a parent is an educator, for better or for worse. Beyond that, any person who interacts with other people has the potential to influence them positively or negatively. And therefore, it's important that we are aware, sensitive to the issues that people who want to impact other people in a positive way need to be aware of, and that we can improve our ability to impact and affect people in a positive way. The title, Chinuch in the Modern World, makes an assumption that the issues of Chinuch have changed in modernity. And I think that's very true. Naturally, issues of Chinuch change all the time as people change. But I think there's a basic difference between the challenges, the assumptions, the mindsets of people in the modern world and hundreds of years ago. Meaning, the change is more dramatic between modernity and ancient times than it is over the last few years, even though there have been many changes over the last few years. And to help express this idea, I want to begin with a piece written by the Pia Setzner Rebbe, become very famous through his Talmidim, through his Svarim that he printed and discovered with his death in the Warsaw Ghetto. He has a piece in a sefer he writes about students called Chovat HaTalmidim. He begins with a question. Lama b'dorot ha-kodmim lanu kol chinuch shehu haya mo'il talmidei kol melameid uvnei kol av rubam kekulam hayu ovdei Hashem v'lo kenata. Why is it that in ancient times, he's writing this in 1932, basically education worked well. People were taught by their parents, by their schools, and they basically, most of them continued the path. What's changed? He answers, Hasiba pshuta v'ikariti shehanoar kam v'choshevet atzmo le'ish b'terem bo mo'ado. Traditionally, a person who was a child, who was young, assumed that he didn't know better, and that it was the parents and the teachers who were going to teach him what he needed to know and how he needed to live his life. We live in a world where people assume that they know just as well as anybody else, and there's no authority or nobody who knows better who's going to tell me what I should be doing. In fact, the Pia Setzner goes even further and says that this assumption that I know better and I'm in charge of myself and this feeling that I need to protect myself from other people trying to tell me who to be goes, can even get to the point where a person becomes so defensive that he looks at, in the next part in bold, anyone trying to give direction, any teacher, any educator, as some kind of foreign ruler trying to control him and limit his independence. This can even lead to hostility, to an objection, a rejection, afsina, towards the person trying to educate. Who are you to educate? Who are you to tell me the way I should be living my life? Or in other words, we live in a generation where it's very hard, where people find it very hard to be educated, and therefore it's very hard to educate. I skipped a line here in the middle of the piece. He didn't, I did, because I feel the second part is about, okay, so what does this mean? He writes, Ha'ikar hu l'hachnis b'libo de'azo, she'yeda shehu ha'na'ar be'atzmo hu ikara mechanech lo katan v'na'arhu. That's what he says. The educational approach in this kind of reality needs to be not one where the teacher, parent, one seeking to impact, sees themselves as having a right to tell the other, this is what you need to do, this is what you should be doing. Not as an authority figure, but to try and get the one you're trying to impact to see himself as having a goal, as having a mission, as being a great person with great potential, as having a responsibility to something higher than himself. That a person should see himself as having been created by God, as God having expectations from him, and the teacher presenting himself as someone who might be able to help the child, let's say, realize the potential that he should feel responsible to realize. Or in other words, if I had to use one word, an educator today has to inspire and not dictate. Inspire someone to see themselves as more. Inspire someone to see themselves responsible to be more. And maybe see the teacher, the educator, as someone who can help the person realize the potential and goals they should have for themselves. Rav Kook wrote about this in his own way. In Eder Yakar, he wrote that Hador motzei et kol mashu shomea ve'roe mehorim morim katan me'erko. This generation finds whatever it's being taught smaller than its value, below them. Hu lo yochol l'shuv mi'ira. He can't do tshuva out of intimidation. Aval ma'od mukhshar hu l'shuv me'ava. But very capable of doing tshuva me'ava, meaning being inspired to want something. V'dor bal ruach gadol chafetz u'muchrach l'chfotz v'chol makom shu poneh l'shmo ha'dvarim gedolim. It's a generation that wants to hear great things, great ideals, great directions. It can be inspired to great things because they can feel that it's coming from them. And just to elaborate on this point a little bit more, one could say, the ideal form of chinuch is when young people, when young'uns, understand that they have to listen to their elders, like in Denver. No, Denver's liberal people, right? Yeah, liberal people, Colorado. Yeah. When the young'uns, you know, in Tennessee, are going to listen to their elders and follow the rules, that would be good. But today, people don't know their place. We have to inspire them. We have to appeal to them. I think that's incorrect because I believe that the way education needs to be done today is really the way it ideally should be done. And it could be that in earlier generations it was possible to get by with a cheaper form of it, and that today it has to be done in a higher level, but I believe it is a higher level. It is a better level. And I believe the source for this, on the top of page 2, is Gemara in Avodah Zarah and a number of other sources we're going to see. The Gemara there says, Amar Rav, Ein Adam Lomei Torah, Ela Mimakum Shalibo Chafetz, Shenemar Kiim B'Torah Hashem Chafetzo. A few lines later, Amar Rava was a much later Amora. Seems like a very similar statement. What's Rava adding to what Rav said? I think you don't have to look at it that carefully to see that Rav is making an ontological statement. Rava is giving a prescriptive. Rav is saying that people don't learn what they don't want to learn. Rav obviously went to high school. Rava is giving advice based on that, which is, a person therefore should learn what he wants to learn, because that's the only thing you'll remember anyway. People know how much they learned in high school and don't remember. Why is it? Is it because we forget so easily? We forget what we don't care about very easily. What we care about, we remember very well. When a person chooses something, it's a basic part of themselves. And this is, I think the source for this is the Ramban's explanation of God's separating Chava from Adam. As we know in Bereshit Perek Aleph Pasuk Chav Zayin, we're told about the creation of man. It says, Vayivra Elokim et Adam b'tzalmo b'tzalem Elokim bara oto, singular, zachar u'nekeva bara otam, plural. So Chazal say, man and woman were created as one being with two perspectives, two facets, two faces. Gemara in Erev and Daf Yud Ches. Why were they separated? Bereshit Perek Bet, Hashem says in Pasuk Yud Chet, it's not good for man to be this way. We're going to separate them and then allow them to come back together. And this separation allows for this very powerful love. When Chava is separated from Adam, when he awakes, Pasuk Chav Gimel, man reflects on how this is a bone of his bone, flesh of his flesh, which leads to man abandoning his most basic loyalty to his parents and being able to stick to some foreigner in a way that he's won and loyal to above everyone else. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, based on this, says, till a person's married, their loyalty is with their parents. Once a person meets that special person, so now the question becomes, why? Why create a situation where people are separate and need to come back together and find each other? Leave it in a way where people are connected in the hip. If I was connected to my wife all the time, I would never make any mistakes. At least that's what she tells me. You know what I'm saying? Meaning, imagine how wonderful it would be. We wouldn't have to search for each other. We wouldn't have to have all these issues. We would be together. The Ramban says, bottom of page 2, the reason God saw it wasn't good for man to be together with his wife is because the spouse needs to be opposite the other in a way that the person can see, separate, and choose to come together. Because you cannot love what you do not choose. And therefore the point is that education on the highest of levels is not when we're dictating to people, but when we are inspiring people to see the value in a path for themselves and to choose it because of that value. And so page 2 is really meant to develop what the Piasetzna writes on page 1 as not being b'dieved, but being l'chatchila. So now the question becomes, in part 2 of this year, how do you do this? We have a big, big challenge to be able to impact people. How do we do this? How do we do this? So I want to give the answer I believe is most basic to the answer in 2 parts. Part number 1, what the method is, and part 2, how you accomplish that method. Let's start with part 1. What is the method? The best and most meaningful and maybe only way to truly impact someone is to appreciate them. Now that may sound strange, because the way I should impact someone is by me telling them they're worthless and telling them what they need to know to be worthful. You cannot impact someone if the person feels you don't value them. And this is why, if we look at Mishnah and Avot, we talk about Hillel being Mitalmid of Shel Aharon. And of course, most people in this Mishnah focus on his 2 pursuits. His pursuits were peace, Rodef Shalom, and Kiruv, Mekarvin LaTorah. But what people don't highlight enough is the basis of what enabled these pursuits, of what drove these pursuits. Why was he a Rodef Shalom? Because he was an Ohev Shalom. Why, and I would say how, was he Makarev LaTorah? Because he was Ohev Esabrios. You see from here that the way to be Makarev people is to love them. I think that's also what should drive Kirev. Why do you want to be Makarev people? Because you care about them so much, you want to help them be the best they can be. You care about what happens to them. And this notion of Avas Habrios being the basis of Kirov, or in the formal sense of Chinuch, Avas HaTalmidim being the basis of teaching, you see in a very interesting flip of the Rambam. What do I mean? The Mishnah in Baba Metzia talks about an extreme situation where a lost object of one's father and one's Rebbe are vying for attention. Or, even more significant, where a father and a Rebbe are chas v'shalom drowning. Whose object, whose life do you save first? You can only save one. Now again, just to clarify, this is talking about an extreme situation where a person's parent is not their Rebbe. Most of our parents are also our Rebbeim on some level. Even if we have other people who taught us more, our parents taught us something, right? This is talking about extreme situation. Let's say a person never met his father till this moment and the father's drowned, didn't learn anything from him. The Mishnah says you save your Rebbe first. You save his object first. Because your parents bring you into this world, your Rebbe brings you into the next world. Lest we think this sounds strange, we have a quote here from Aristotle, who says, those who educate children well are more to be honored than they who produce them. For these only gave them life, those the art of living well. And then Aristotle doesn't have much more beyond the art of living well to talk about. We have Chai Olam Haba, which is obviously much better than the art of living well. In any case, this is true, but let's look at what the Rambam does with this concept. Rambam Hilchot Talmud Torah says, Perakei Halacha Yudbet, Kishem she'atalmidim chayovim b'chvod harav, kach harav tzarich lechabed et talmidov ulekarvon. Kach omer chachomim, hikvod talmid chachoviv olecho kishaloch. V'tzarich adam lehizoher b'talmidov. A person has to be careful with his students. Ule'oavim, and to love them. Shehem habonim hamehanim l'olam hazeh u'l'olam haba. The Rambam speaks not about what a Rebbe does for a Talmud, but what a Talmud does for a Rebbe. A Talmud is the one who gives you pleasure in this world and the next world. And there is no greater pleasure than being able to interact in this way. And this, of course, is the reason why Chazal say, based on the fact that the Torah presents the children of Aaron as the children of Moshe, that anyone who teaches the son of their friend Torah, it's as if they gave birth to them. The Yerushalmi explaining Yeshayahu's reference to his students as his children says that the Talmidim should be chavivin alav, like his own children. And a source which really says this out very clearly, Rav Yitzchak Arama, the author of the Akedat Yitzchak, writes in another one of his books, Rak misha ohev et talmidov, yishtadel beli safek lehorot lehem ba'ofen hayoter mo'il. Only someone who loves his students will work really hard to teach them properly. V'limudav udvarav yasu roshim chazak b'libam. And what he teaches them will make a strong impression on them. Kichein nosad b'teva adam. That's the way people work. Sherak limudem moreha ohev et talmidav yaku shorish b'kirbo v'lo b'meira yasu rimenu. The way people are programmed is that they care about the things they learn from someone they feel cares about them. If you want your first tip as a teacher, it is you have to figure out a way to care very deeply about the people you want to care about what you're saying, which is the exact opposite of what most people think teaching is. Teaching is, I know everything, and I'm going to tell you everything that I know. You can do that. It's wonderful data. I'm sure you've studied by Rebbeim who have taught you that way, and you may have appreciated the receiving of data you could get on the internet a lot more quickly. If I can say humbly, fairly nagala, some of the secrets. The secret of the Rebbeim in Yeshivat HaKotel is they all really seek to appreciate all of their Talmidim. You maybe had a hard time putting your finger on it. What's the difference? Okay, there you go. Pin the tail on the donkey. But the Rebbeim here would be the donkey. Now the question is, how do you accomplish this? How do you get Talmidim to care about what you're saying? I maybe should have said this a little earlier. Okay, we got to inspire our Talmidim, right? We can't dictate to them, right? So what do most teachers do today to inspire you? Basically, if you use one word, it's called bribery. Now, there are many, many forms of bribery. There's direct bribery, right? Anyone who finishes the test or does well is going to get a free ticket to the baseball game. Or, you know, will get me to smile at them, which is another form of bribery. That may get certain results, but it doesn't really get someone to be inspired. Someone to feel they matter and to feel you know they matter, that's very different. Now the question is, and here comes part two. So the method is, you have to love your students or the people you're trying to impact. How do you do that? Not so easy to love Talmidim. Some of them are very difficult people. We can talk a parallel conversation. You're supposed to love Jews. How is it possible to love Jews? Jews are terrible. And if you ever fly El Al, again, flying El Al is much worse than flying, you know, with Jews on other airlines. Because when Jews on other airlines, with the exception of EasyJet, which is a Hendon reunion, right? When Jews are on other airlines, they feel we're an away game by the goyim. When Jews are on El Al, it's unzer. They allow themselves to act like Jews, and it's very hard to love Jews. I think the answer is the same thing. Let's look on page 4. Rav Nachman Breslov has a piece, Simen Reish Pei Beis, which he said was his most important piece. It's become a very basic part of Israeli culture of people trying to function this way. There's even a verb in modern Hebrew called Lisharpeb, which means to apply Simen Reish Pei Beis. Lisharpeb. Now, Rav Nachman's piece is building off the Mishnah in Avos, which says that a person should be Danis Kol Adam Lekaf Schus. I think what bothered Rav Nachman here was, shouldn't be don people at all. I mean, don the kafskos. Don't don people. It must be that don the kafskos is an important thing. Not if you're donning don the kafskos. No, you have to really do it. And he says that in essence, don the kafskos isn't just how you view someone, it's how you impact and affect someone. And he says that even the biggest Russia has a redeeming factor. And you have to search for that. search for the way he's not a Rasha. Find the good in him and determine that he's a good person. And through that, you help him turn the corner to becoming a better person, to doing tshuva. Later on, Rav Nachman talks about how you have to do that towards yourself too. Basically, I would say there's two forms of tshuva. One is, you are terrible, you are terrible, you are evil, you better correct yourself or you're damned. Now, the problem with that form of tshuva is that if I'm so terrible and I'm damned, so to hell with it. The other form is, you're a great person. You can be much greater than this. Look at all the good in you. You can determine in how you interact with someone and yourself how a person views themselves in the direction they choose to take for themselves. The identification of the good in someone else is the basis of being able to learn from and appreciate someone else. And that, of course, is the backdrop to the famous statement of the Gemara in Tainus Daf Zayin that I learned a lot from my Rebbe and more from my friends and the most from my Talmid. What do you mean learn from my Talmid? I mean a bunch of idiots. I tell them what they need to know and then I send them out for the day. How do I learn the most from my Talmid? Because I find in them what I don't have. And the truth is that this is really an approach to life. And man, one of the important Divrei Torah I like to say, I don't know if people heard from me, I'm sorry if you've heard it already, is on Tehillim Perek Lamed Aleph. Let's read the psukim together. Mi ha'ish ha'chafetz chayim. Ohev yomim liros tov. Nitzor l'shon chameiroh svatach midaber mirah. Everyone knows those psukim, right? What are those psukim about? Don't look at what I wrote. What are those psukim about? Everyone say, what are they about? I say l'shon hara. I think that's incorrect. Let's read the words. Aaron wasn't telling me that's what he thinks the psukim are about. He was telling me that that's what people think it's about. Don't think Aaron knows. The psukim are about mi ha'ish ha'chafetz chayim. Who is the person who desires life? Meaning, is the point of these psukim that if you say Lashon Hara, you're going to die? It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah if you say Lashon Hara, you get killed for it. If so, no one would be alive, right? That was Lashon Hara. I mean, it's saying here is not who desires life versus death, but who desires life in the true sense of the word. What is life in the true sense of the word? A person who loves every day. Mi ha'esh ha'chavetz chayim? Ohev yomim. How do you love every day? Liros tov. Person wakes up in the morning. Their roommate smells. They have the wrong room with a window that faces the wrong direction. The sink is broken. Nothing's what it's supposed to be. The heater has a piece of rust on it. They didn't start on time. They got the wrong chazen. Why do they have cucumbers and not tomatoes for breakfast? Are you going to be happy? Are you going to love your day? If you see all the bad, you hate every day of your life. Just terrible. Then you have those, you know, those girl boys. Everything's so wonderful. You see only the good. Look at my roommate, gets up on time and even worries about waking me up 15 minutes before davening. He's so considerate. Wow. Look at the fact his hot water or worker worked last night. It was something broken. He fixed it so I would have hot water. Wonderful. Person walks around that day that way. He's going to love every day because he loves everything he sees. The advice of the pasuk, it's Tehillim and not a parsha in the Torah, is if you want to love every day, which is what life, having a good life depends upon by seeing good, don't talk all day about the bad, because if you talk all day about the bad, you'll be consumed by it. So it's a general point in life. And this is where Ahava comes from. Rav Nachman in another piece writes that when we speak to each other, we have to speak to each other with Yirah Shamayim. Why Yerushamayim? I'm talking to some yokel. What is Yerushamayim? He says, "Tzarech kol adam ledaver im chaveru beYerushamayim, kedei lekabel hitorurut belibo mihanekuda sheyesh bechaveru yoter mimenu." So we can be inspired by what our friends have more than what we have. V'sham bahanekuda azot, says Rav Nachman, shora ha'ava, and it's at that point where the root of love is. The attempt to try and love other people in some mechanical way is doomed to failure. Love is when we see something in someone that makes us better, or happy, that enriches us. The only way to love other people is if we see something in them that we gain from. If we can't find something in someone else that we enjoy and gain from, there's no way we can love them. So the way we can impact people is by loving them, by seeing the good in them. This is the conclusion of part one in the shiur.
Now, it's, what do you mean? I said part two. It's not going to be part one if I said part two.
The answer is, it's the conclusion of part one and part two that are all part of part one. Aha. Now we're getting to
part two.
That's what comes after part one. So I have a quote here from Van Gogh. It's a different way of saying his name. If you treat a person as he is, he will remain as he is. But if you treat him as he ought to be and could be, he will become what he ought to be and could be. Meaning, we shouldn't relate to people based upon their limitations today. We should see people based upon what we know they can be. And the source for this, I believe, is a medrash on the parshios we are now reading in Shul. Shulchan Aruch says that even though the milk of a goyish woman is kosher, a Jewish baby should not nurse from a goyish woman if it's possible to find them a Jewish woman. What's the source for this? The Gra quotes the medrash on Parshat Shmot. It says there that the sister of Moshe, Miriam, came up to Bat Paro and said, should I get you a nursemaid from the Jewish women who will be able to nurse the baby for you?
Why? What's wrong with the Egyptians? The
Medrash said Moshe refused to nurse from any of the Egyptian women. The Medrash explains because a mouth that would one day speak with the Shekhinah is going to nurse from a non-kosher source. Now the obvious question is, okay, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. You are not Moshe Rabbeinu. Why is that halach of everybody? The answer is something that every Jewish mother knows and is programmed to live by. We have here Eitan Phillips' mother. Eitan Phillips' mother will tell you that if her son, Eitan, needs violin lessons, he is going to the best violin teacher, not the number two violin teacher in London, the best violin teacher. And if Chas V'Shalom needs to see a doctor, he's not going to the number two doctor. He is going to the best doctor. No Jewish mother takes their child to anyone less than the best. Why? Goyim don't always go to the best doctor. Go wherever the doctor is. Jewish mothers are programmed to know that my son will be the greatest. Not number two. The greatest. Now that programming is not meant to be for violin lessons. It's meant to be for Kedusha and Limud and Torah and spirituality. To be the best we can be. Every Jewish baby is meant to be raised as Moshe Rabbeinu. And that, of course, is the source for the Rambam who writes that a person shouldn't think we're predestined for what we are. Ein hadavar kein, kol adam roi lo liot tzadik k'moshe Rabbeinu. By the way, it doesn't say chacham k'moshe Rabbeinu, but tzadik k'moshe Rabbeinu. Everyone has the ability to be righteous, to be very righteous. So number one, we have to educate for greatness and inspire people about their ability to be great. Number two, very important, and a balancing factor to number one, is to educate for individuality. Say, everyone should be Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Let's all figure out his shoe size. What shoe size was Moshe Rabbeinu? Stone style. No, we educate everyone for greatness, but their individual greatness. Everybody knows the idea mentioned in many sources, I have it here from Rav Tzedek HaKohen and Sisei Laila. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. There aren't. It's a symbolic idea. And each one has their own letter in the Torah. The problem is that when we teach people things, we already know all the right letters in the Torah. So when someone else comes up with something different than what we're saying, which might be their letter in the Torah, we explain to them why it's wrong. To be able to educate people within Torah, to hear the voice the Medrash describes as each Jew hearing based upon who he was. Or the way the Psikta to Rav Kahana, based on the singular lashon of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Otzeiticha, as opposed to the way it's generally said, Ani Hashem Elokechem, talks about how Hashem appeared, spoke to the Jewish people at Sinai like a hologram, an ikunin, which has faces on every side. 1,000 people can look at it, and each one feels that it is looking back at them in a unique way. And this is how Rav Kook explains why. Pasuk says that when a person learns their Yagdil Torah V'Yadir, they make the Torah greater. Why do they make the Torah greater? What am I adding to it? Rav Kook writes, each person interfaces with each piece of Torah in a way different than any other person who ever lived and ever will live. And therefore, when I learn a piece of Torah, I make the Torah greater because I'm adding my perspective to it. It's supposed to be that way. In fact, the Rush, three sources on the bottom of page 6, presents this as part of what Torah Lishma means. Understanding it and adding to the body of Torah. Which is why the Gemara in Kedushin says that a Talmud Chacham has the ability to be mochel on his kavod. Why? It's the kavod of Torah, not his own kavod. How can he be mochel on kavod of Torah? The Gemara says, when you learn Torah, the Torah is yours. And by the way, when will a person be inspired to learn Torah in a passionate way? When they feel they're learning their own Torah. And of course, this is why we say, V'tein chelkenu v'torah techo, our own chelek. This is true regarding Torah, and it's true, page 7, in general, beyond Torah. We all know the pasuk, chanoch lenar al pi darko, which means, as the Malbim explains, that we have to understand who an individual is and what kind of chinuch will inspire him. The Gra explains that this is what the pasuk means when it says, chanoch lenar al pi darko, gam ki yazkin lo yosem yimena. Even when he gets old, he won't leave the path. If you're teaching a child or a student your path, so he'll leave that path. If you're teaching him his path, it's something that he really is and something he'll continue with, even when he gets old. Rav Kook writes about this, talking about the goals of chinuch. Says, each person has his own derech. And we, the older people, we have to be able to reconnect with the derech of that child. Only then can we be sure that we're going to impact the child in a meaningful way. Famous vart where this is presented is it talks about how Esav and Yaakov grew older, and suddenly, when they grew up, they were very different than each other. Rashi says when they turned 13, one went to the Beis HaMedrash and the other went to Avodah Zarah. The Medrash explains a little bit more elaborately that until 13, they both went together and came home from school together. All of a sudden, 13, boom! What happened? So many explain the problem was they went together to school. Anyone who knew who Esav and Yaakov were should not have sent them together to school. Whatever school was right for Yaakov was not right for Esav. And that's indeed what ended up happening. To skip over a couple sources, well, you know what, let's not skip over these sources. Very important, we'll talk about it later in the year. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Mem Gimel says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes each person, creates them in a way that they're going to like what their job is supposed to be. Rashi explains, God creates people who like the smell of gas. Or of manure, as the example he gives, because there are people who are going to need to be tanners who work with manure. By the way, the implication of this would be that if you want to know what your profession in life is supposed to be, you got to look at what God makes you to like. But the point is, people are different. If Cook writes in another piece in the bottom of page 7, chinuch is not the creation or the fostering of new things. It's helping a person realize what they already have within themselves. And when you tap into that, you're helping a person reconnect and be inspired by who they really are. And I'd like to conclude with a poem from William Wordsworth, which is important because it's important for English people to know that there are Americans who wrote literature that's worthwhile. You know, when I went to school, we studied Shakespeare. We studied, Americans. William Wordsworth is talking about how train a poet. How do you teach a person to be a poet? A poet! He hath put his heart to school. Someone's teaching him how to write poetry. Nor dares to move unpropped upon the staff, which art hath lodged within his hand, must laugh by precept only and shed tears by rule. What he's writing about here is how you try and teach a person to be an artist, to be a poet. We tell them the rules of poetry. This is how you write poetry. And the person who is a young poet is careful not to write anything which is not according to the rules. He sheds tears by rule. The real truth is thy art be nature, the live current quaff, and let the groveler sip his stagnant pool. The groveler is the one trying to find favor in other people, so he's drinking from some stagnant pool. But nature is something alive. The groveler isn't fear that elves, when critics grave and cool, have killed him. Scorn should write his epitaph. You can kill someone's artistic, individualistic potential by telling them how to do things properly. In contrast, how does the meadow flower its bloom unfold? Because the lovely little flower is free. Down is its root, and in that freedom bold, and so the grandeur of the forest tree comes not by casting in a formal mold, but from its own divine vitality. The belief that the spirit inside us, for sure as a religious person, comes from above. What's inside us is special and beautiful, and
other people too, of course, right?
And wonderful. And we have to help ourselves and other people realize the greatness we have within ourselves in a unique way. But it really begins, if we go back to the Chovas HaTalmidim, not to dictate to other people what we know as all-knowing teachers and parents, but to try and inspire people to be responsible for themselves, to see themselves as having great potential and to be inspired to want to realize it and to not settle for anything less. And the way we can inspire people is by appreciating them, helping them see that we appreciate them, helping them aspire for greatness in their own individual way. This is how I understand chinuch in the modern world. And I hope that all of you will be inspired by the great potential of being able to inspire other people to want to figure out the ways that you can best inspire other people. And it has nothing to do with whether you become a teacher. You should become a teacher if you feel you're very good at inspiring people. You should try your best to inspire however you can, even if you're not a teacher. And everyone can inspire. We need to make ourselves the people who can do the things we can do, accomplish what we can accomplish. Because there definitely is great need. Mr. Schiff, is there great need?
Definitely.
Yishar koach to all those who are going to be involved in the Yemeyun on education. And to the general leadership program, to all those who will give, to all those who will learn, and hopefully we will become just a little bit better versions of ourselves. All right, I want you to have a good week. Tuesday morning, Dr. Carl is going to be taking pictures for this year's Shana Aleph photo. You know what I'm saying? When you get your own little picture, you'll be assigned with that. But keep in mind, you're going to be around Tuesday morning, whatever time you had to do it on straight, to realize, you can't remember.